Yes, your past, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad colors. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I'd like to start this talk with a little more explanation of terms that I'm using. Let's take the term conversion. Of course, when I use that term, I mean spiritual conversion, or spiritual transformation. And as a Buddhist using this term, I don't just mean that one changes one's beliefs, one adopts a different belief system, a different ideology, a different religion. For a moment, let's replace the term conversion with another term. Let's use the term change of heart. When we speak of spiritual conversion, we're speaking of a profound change of heart. The way this is described in one ancient Buddhist text is a turning about in the seat of deepest consciousness. Now, practically speaking, because each of us has a karmic inheritance, we're always working from that karmic inheritance as a basis. We have deeply rooted habits of body, speech, and mind that are rooted entirely in that karmic inheritance. There's what is called a habit energy in those habits. They have a kind of forward momentum. Having acted in certain ways, having thought in certain ways, we tend to go down the same track. And there tends to be a kind of momentum along that track. So when we speak of this profound change of heart, we're trying to express a profound change in the direction of that spiritual momentum. So, for example, in the case of a habitual grasping and greedy way of acting, way of thinking, we would see the signs of this profound conversion, this change of heart, in a change in the direction of generosity, acceptance, gratitude for what one has. And that change would be gradually replacing the grasping, greedy tendency. And new habits would be forming. Where there was a habit of greed, there would be a habit forming of generosity. The greediness, the graspiness, is never going to completely vanish. As I was emphasizing yesterday, this darker karma is the raw material of enlightenment. So more enlightened attitudes and actions are going to be continuously being generated out of whatever remains of the greediness and the graspiness as we work on it, as we work on that dark karma in our training in the precepts and in meditation. Now, in the process of this conversion, this change of heart, this transformation, there are many external signs and effects. For example, perhaps the person who used to hoard money in their mattress might now be putting it in their bank and periodically writing checks to charitable organizations. A person who might have been trying to gather up every choice tidbit at a dinner for themselves might be sharing them with their friends. A a person who was trying to always be the center of attention might be graciously and quietly enjoying the company of others. There are innumerable ways in which this transformation manifests, and all of these ways have significance and have an impact on the world around us. Yet the greatest impact, the greatest significance of this change, the deep meaning of this change, is what is happening within the heart itself. Some dark, sludgy, turgid stuff is being transformed into something bright, flowing, exquisite. Or you might say, and this is probably more accurate, that the true nature of that dark, turgid, painful stuff is finally being revealed, as if a dark coating of paint was being dissolved and an underlying substance of gold or silver being revealed. Similarly, we can easily enough assess at least the short-term consequences of the manifestations and external events of this change. For example, we can see the person writing the check to the charity instead of hoarding the money under the bed in the mattress. The longer-term effects, however, are hidden from our view. What happens when that person dies? What happens to the merit that has been made in the course of this transformation? How will that merit manifest in the future? In what realms might that merit manifest? How will that change of heart carry on in the minds and lives of other beings? It's said that a Buddha can see these things. Most of us may get some glimpse or some intuition, but mostly I think we don't see them. We have to trust. We have to trust. It certainly is the experience of many people that when a really good person dies, a kind of brightness is released into the universe. I think of it as a kind of shower of blessing that is released into the universe. Like many of us experienced this when Reverend Master Jiyu died, when Reverend Alexis died. The first 2 weeks immediately following his death felt to me, and I think to everyone else in our temple, like we were living in a kind of shower of blessing. I think this perceived shower is just the beginning of something that goes on and on and on. It has profound effects going into the future. When I ended the talk yesterday, just before I ended the talk yesterday, I emphasized two things. First of all, that karmic cause and karmic consequence are not going anywhere. This is just the way things are. Secondly, that the rebirth realms are karmic consequential. That it is the result of our actions of body, speech, and mind, that karma ends up in one realm or another, that its spiritual need continues on, seeking the help of the eternal. Well, this is as true of meritorious karma as it is of the dark karma that perpetuates suffering. Merit that has been made and accumulated continues on, and it gravitates to the kind of need that requires the kind of help that it can give. How this happens, the mechanisms by which it happens, I don't have a clue. I tend to just take the point of view that the Eternal has it all in hand, and that the Eternal will direct help in whatever form is appropriate to whatever need is out there. What I was shown recently, and that perhaps surprised me, I don't know if that's quite the right word, but certainly did amaze me, is that this is kind of a kind of creation. It's not making something out of nothing. As far as I can determine, we have an idea of nothing, but we don't actually have any experience of nothing. But rather, it's changing something into something else, that the former something is the potential, and the latter something is the actualization. So that, for example, greed is the potential for generosity. Hatred is the potential for compassion. Pride is the potential for humility. Doubt is the potential for faith. And our meditation, the practice of meditation, is a process in which the spiritual need is linked up to the vehicle of a human body and mind, a human heart. with the help that the Eternal is holding, waiting for that need. Therefore, meditation is a kind of conduit between spiritual need and spiritual help. And there is a wondrous mixing of need and help within the context of meditation. Our master often referred to it as the mixing and the melding. And in this process of this mixing, where they get all blended up and shook up together, the help and the need, which just requires a quiet mind, a focused attention, and an open, trusting heart, which is what meditation provides. When there is this context, this mixing and melding can happen. And the deepest aspects of that change of heart can take place. It's not an accident that so often we might sit down in meditation with a troubled mind, a worried mind, and yet 30 minutes later, get up and the trouble has vanished. The worry has vanished. Why did that happen? When we sat down, we brought whatever we had right on the spot, right at the time, we brought it to the help of the Eternal. And even if our mind was racing the whole time, we still get up with some experience of the benefit of that need, finding some help. The deeper the meditation, the more this process can happen in an unobstructed way. When this happens, something new is being made out of something old. And that which is made in this process will forever be a blessing for the entire world.